Amazing what happens in one chapter in the Bible. It's amazing the difference in people in just a few verses. What causes such a drastic change? Something that they experience that makes them say, evidently, I've had it. They reach a point where they feel like they can go no further, and really it is a breaking point in their life. Lest you think that that's inappropriate what I'm saying, turn to Mark chapter 14 this morning. You could find this in Matthew 13. Mark gives a little more detail, so I'm reading from Mark 14. It's in the same passage that Wayne read from and preached from a week ago Wednesday night. In Mark chapter 14 and verse 27. Mark chapter 14 and verse 27. Bear in mind, this is a tiny watch. And when I take these glasses off, I can't see well. Say amen right there. Mark 14, 27. And Jesus saith unto them, all ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered. But after that I am risen, I will go before you into Galilee. But Peter said unto him, although all shall be offended, yet will not I. Jesus saith unto him, verily I say unto thee, that this day, even in this night, now watch this, before the cock crow what? Twice. Thou shalt deny me thrice. Before it crows two times, you'll deny me three times. But he spake the more vehemently, if I should die with thee, underline these next four or five words, I will not deny. I will not deny thee in any wise. Likewise also said they all. Go down now, if you will, to verse 66. Same chapter, verse 66. 35 verses later. And as Peter was beneath in the palace, there cometh one of the maids of the high priest. And when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked upon him and said, and thou also was with Jesus of Nazareth. He said in verse 31, I will not deny thee. Look what he says in verse 68. But he denied, saying, I know not, neither understand I what you sayest. And he went out into the porch, and the cock crew. And the maid saw him again, and began to say to them that stood by, this is one of them. And he denied it again. And a little after, they that stood by said unto Peter, surely thou art one of them, for thou art a Galilean, and thy speech agreeth thereto. But he began to curse and to swear, saying, I know not this man of whom ye speak. And the second time the cock crew, and Peter called to mind the word that Jesus said unto him, before the cock crow twice, thou shalt deny me thrice. And when he thought thereon, he wept. Another gospel writer says, he wept bitterly. What happened in a space of a few hours that would cause a man to go from a place where he said there was one thing that he absolutely would never, ever, ever do to doing that very thing? What caused that? What causes people to come to this church and say, I believe certain things, and I stand on those principles, and in a matter of days after they relocate and go somewhere else, suddenly they don't believe anything that they told us they believed? What is it that makes people tell you, I promise you I will do this, and they do the exact opposite? What is it that makes people write laws that they refuse to enforce? Stay with me. We're in a society where now we're reaching a place where folks, people have just had it. They just had it. Something happened to Peter in a short period of time where that he went from a place of stability and strength to a place where he felt like he just couldn't tolerate it anymore. This look familiar to any of you? Mom and Dad used to have these behind the door. And it wasn't for measuring how wide the refrigerator and shelf were. It wasn't for measuring how low from the ceiling to hang the paintings. I hated these. In fact, when I picked one up this week, I cringed, but I knew I needed it for the message. I used to, when Mom and Dad would be out working or I could get alone for a little while and get my hands on this, I used to hate this so much that I would see how far it would bend. Because I wanted to break it so bad that I couldn't stand it. Man, it's amazing. It's got a lot of give to it, doesn't it? No wonder it hurts so bad. But if you're not real careful, you'll get so intrigued with that that you'll start saying, wonder how far I can bring my hands together. Wonder how far that thing will go. Uh-oh. I think I hear cracking. Better let off a little bit. Mom and Dad wouldn't have liked that, you know. But man, I hate this thing. Can't stand it. I hate it. Whoever invented them, we'll lock them up for life. I keep going and going and going. Look at that. Boy, that's something, isn't it? You hear that cracking, Kevin? Don't worry, I won't point it toward you. Uh-oh. At a breaking point. No problem. Like a Boy Scout, I'm prepared. I'll fix it back. Bob, where's your duct tape? Oh, man. This ain't going to work. Oh, there we go. There we go. Yeah, there we go. Oh, yeah, now we're headed there, ain't we? How's it looking? Looking good, ain't it? All right. Mom and Dad will never know the difference. Yes, sirree. They will not know when I get through with this bad boy. It will be just like new. Not hardly as strong, but we're getting there. I know. Needs more tape. Some of y'all have done this. We're getting there now, aren't we? There we go. There, just like new. Do you really think that they couldn't tell the difference? I'd like to think that was the case because what they used it for just became ineffective. Somewhere between the first reading and the second reading, something pushed Peter to a place that he cracked. He broke. Now I know I won't be able to get all of this sermon done today. But I do think it's a subject that has to be dealt with. Because I deal with enough people in my life and we have enough real life experiences that you have to agree with me. There are some things that just drive you to the breaking point. Some of you have said this very week, if that boss comes out here and jumps on me one more time, that's it. I quit. Some of you have said undoubtedly this week, if that child does one more thing, that's it. Some of you have said this week, if he cheats on me one more time, that's it. This marriage is over. Some of you have said, if my friend betrays me one more time, if somebody comes to me and gripes at me just one more time, I'm telling you, I've had it to hear. Somewhere, Peter reached a place where he went from absolute confidence to doing the very thing that he said he would never do. And the reason that he did that was he reached a breaking point in his life. Some of you even sat in this service this morning and say to yourself, if that church does just one more thing, that's it. I'm out of there. I'm not going back anymore. There are things in our life that puts pressure on us that we never thought we would go through. And when the pressure gets strong enough and the pressure gets severe enough, we start to crack. And as we start to crack, oh, I feel God this morning. As we start to crack, it is our position with God where God finally starts to use us and speak to us. And He's trying to tell us help is on the way. He's trying to warn us before the problem ever comes. But we get so caught up in the fact that we are so fed up with this that we cannot take it anymore. And we get caught up in that so much that we miss the message that God sends to us. Don't tell me this subject is not relevant. Jeremiah said, that's it. I'll not preach His word anymore. How many preachers have ever reached a place where they said, I've had enough. I'm going to quit the ministry. Years ago, I'm talking back in the late 70s probably, there was a nationally known evangelist that came to Wheelersburg, Ohio. Whether you like his doctrine or not really doesn't matter to me. But I sat in that meeting and I heard him say some things and I can't even recall all the things that he said. But one of the things that he said has come true. He said, as we near the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ, you'll see two things happen to ministers in the ministry. Number one, ministry will become merely a profession instead of a calling. And the day the ministry becomes a profession instead of a calling, the ministers will not be able to hold up under that because of the pressure that the enemy puts on them. And ministers will leave the ministry in great numbers. And we're seeing that happen now all across this great nation because the ministry is not merely an occupation. Yes, I get to work for God. Yes, God provides for me. But it's so much more than an occupation. It is a calling from God. And he said, you mark it down. 20 years from now, you mark the full-time churches with full-time pastors. 20 years from now, that number will diminish greatly. Was he right or was he wrong? He's right. But do you know why preachers get out of the ministry? Do you know why it's so hard to get people, and folks, now you think that I'm just saying this. Do you know the very ones that oftentimes leave the church the quickest. People that have held the most important jobs. First they quit their job and then they quit the church. Really, first they quit giving to the church. That's why I'm so glad. Hey, by the way, I don't know what any of you all give, and I don't want to know. And I know there's preachers that feel like it's their business, and that's their business. I don't want to know, because probably when you stop giving, the next sign is you're going to stop coming. It's just the way it goes. So I really don't meddle with that, because I don't want to spend my time worrying about who's coming and going. You get so... Oh, I am preaching this morning, I think. You get so caught up in that, that you're so worried about who's coming and going, you forget about the ones that are there. Jeremiah said, I'll not mention his name anymore. We read of Elijah, he goes under the juniper tree and wishes to die. The Apostle Paul said that he was pressed beyond measure. I'm telling you, this applies. What a subject. What's the source of it? What causes someone to do something like this? I think it's simple. Peter had overcome every enemy that could be seen. You give Peter an enemy he could see, he would handle it. When everybody else stayed in the boat, he jumped out and got to walk on the water. When it came to a point where they were standing there ready to besiege Christ and take him captive, Peter was the first one to draw a sword out. He was willing to cut off the ear. Nothing any more dangerous than a preacher with a weapon. Bring him on. I take him on. Any enemy seen. I think that because Peter had always been there and worked with him, and Peter had gone through so many things and seen so many miracles and seen the miraculous and seen God take care, that I think he really felt there was nothing that could get to him. You look at me. You look at me good. There is something that the devil knows and God knows that can put pressure on both ends of your life to a place that it will absolutely make you snap if you don't turn to God and find help for it. The enemy was not seen. The enemy was unseen. There are unseen enemies in life. The signs of this. How can you tell when you're just about there where you've had it? I'll give you three things. Number one, he did what he had no desire to do. You'll start doing stuff that you really don't want to do. And trying to talk yourself into it, that it's right to do it. Doing stuff that you know you have already settled in your heart. And here's the problem when you start doing stuff like that. What you are doing then is you are breaking your own laws. I want you to understand the complication of what I'm talking about and why few preachers will even deal with it. This weekend, we have been so blessed to have an instant multiplication of law enforcement people. They are everywhere. Everywhere. I know who got picked up. You just told on yourself. And of course they should be. Will cause deaths to go down. It's logical. They should be. This is a treacherous weekend, as most holiday weekends are. But they're there waiting for you, watching for you. Not that they want you to, but there are signs posted up this road. Sometimes it changes. Sometimes it's 45, sometimes it's 35, and sometimes it's 25. Unless you think that that law is not applicable on this weekend, try doing 45 in a 25. What will happen? Come on, what will happen? You will be pulled over for breaking the law, and you will pay the punishment for breaking the law. Now, what happens when a state highway patrolman speeds? Stay with me. What happens when a sheriff speeds? What a deputy speeds? When a policeman speeds and there's no other officers around? But they know that they have broken the law too. Ed, do you ever arrest yourself? I don't mean this to say, Woody, have you ever arrested yourself for speeding? No. That is stupid. I know that's a stupid question to ask. You've got a stupid preacher. The dilemma is you can't arrest yourself. That is the problem here. You break a law that you have set yourself. And there is no way for you to arrest yourself for the law that you have broken. And that's what creates the real dilemma. Peter knew what he was doing, hated what he was doing, but he could not arrest himself. He kept saying, I am confident. I think maybe he thought if he said it enough, he would really believe it. There's those of you that will say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do right. I intend to do right. I need to do right. The problem is, you cannot arrest yourself. The other thing he did, he not only did something he had no desire to do, he followed afar off. I won't deal with that much because Wayne did an excellent job on that. The question is all how close we are to the Lord. It's a matter of personal preference, where you want to be with Christ. And I'll stop right here. Let me pause right here. You can be just as close to the Lord as you want to be. You can be closer than your preacher. You can be closer to the Lord than your church leaders. You can be just as close to the Lord as you want to be. No one can put that desire in you. You have to determine that and say, I want to be close enough to God to know what's going on. Then, the third thing. He did something he had no desire to do. He followed afar off. And then he started lying to survive. That little maid come and said, you're one of them, aren't you? Oh, no, not me. Hey, who you are will tell on you. Sooner or later, somebody will come to you and say, I thought you were one of them. I thought you were one of Christ's followers. Didn't you say you were one of Christ's followers? Then what are you doing here? Didn't you say you were one of Christ's followers? What are you doing in a nightclub? Didn't you say you're one of them? What are you doing in the bar? Well, I don't want the shouting to leave you. I'm just telling you that's the way it is. Your friends at school and college, didn't you say you were one of them? What are you using language like that for? Hey, if you don't have enough consciousness to arrest yourself, the world will question us. The world will say, if you're one of them, then why? Then came the signal. It's important that you read Mark's. It's not that the other gospel writers left out anything, but Mark makes it plain. The cock crew twice. He denied him thrice. What's so important about that? Please get this. When we feel like we have had it to here and we can go no further and we are about to break, God will not let you reach the breaking point without sending you a signal. He is not concerned about merely cleaning up your messes. While He has the power to do that, God will signal you that the mess is on the way. God will try to signal you to say, listen, you're headed in the wrong direction. Just as sure as those bars come down at a railroad crossing and the lights are flashing and the bells are ringing, God is saying to your heart and to the innermost part of you, there is a train wreck coming. If you don't stop, there is an accident coming that you want no part of, and it will be your fault because you are about to break. God sends signals. That means there will be no mistake of you coming back and saying, I wish the preacher would have told me. I wish the deacons would have told me. God sends you signals constantly saying, listen, you're just about to cave in. You're at a breaking point. Boy, I'm running out of time fast, but I want to hit this. When he heard it twice. Stay with me now. I want you to follow this because it's important. First, we dealt with the subject of it. Then we dealt with the source of it. Then we dealt with the signal. Then comes the sorrow. He wept bitterly. Oh boy, here we go. I told my deacon something in a meeting the other night that I'm going to tell you now. I've had it with gossips. I really have. I'm so tired of people lying about me and lying about our church and lying about what I do. I get so fed up with that. Don't worry, I'm past the breaking point. Not that I'm better. I told Candy Friday afternoon late, I said, honey, since I was sick and in the hospital in February, I've not had one day off. Not one day. About 7 days a week. I said Friday, I said, we're leaving town. We're going out of town. We went out of town overnight, and I cleared my head. You better bless God I cleared my head. And I can't understand, you know, here's my dilemma. For any of you that know me very well, you know that, and not because I'm boasting, this is just my nature. I'm a very compassionate giving. I'm very firm on what I believe, but I'm very compassionate toward others. I try to be compassionate toward others. Let me put it that way. And it seems like the ones I give the most to, are you with me? Are the first one. We had a German Shepherd dog one time, and I remember hiring that German Shepherd dog got in our neighbor's chickens. And the neighbor said, you got to put the dog down. Dad didn't want to put the dog down. We love the dog. I'm sorry if you're an animal lover. But the dog needed to be put down. Back then, that's how people lived. What they raised. So, one day, he was debating on what to do. The dog was chained up. It was safe for then. But one day, I went out with my brother, and Angie might have been there. We went out to feed the dog. Shep, you remember Shep? It's an old song. Don't ask me to sing it for you. Floyd's laughing. He can remember. I remember the time at the old swimming hole. And I would have all but drowned. But old Shep was right there to the rescue he came. And he jumped in and he dragged me out. Stay with me. I'm talking to Floyd right now. Don't cry now, Floyd. I remember that song too. But I went to feed the dog, and the dog almost ate me alive. See, it didn't stop. It didn't stop with chickens. Once it got a taste of blood, it was uncontrollable. And it's a funny thing when you love certain things and you feed certain things and then it turns on you. And what happens is you get to the point that you're saying, man, I am doing all of this for others. And I'm not talking about just you. You understand where I'm coming from? Because you've done the same thing. And then they turn on you. And they start lying about you. And then the first thing, here's the breaking point. The breaking point says, don't ever do anything for anybody again. And suddenly you start hearing all of this gossip come back. And if you're smart, you won't feed it. If you feed it, it will grow. They have accomplished what they wanted to do. If you tell others about it too much, it will grow. So God gave me a revelation. You want to hear it? I'm going to stop preaching much. You won't hear me talk much about gossip, just in passing. God taught me how to pray for my gossips. Seriously, I'm serious. God taught me, this is what God taught me. Pray they live a long life. Now, that didn't make sense when I heard it. Lord, I want them to live a long life. I just pray when they go, I don't have to preach the funeral. Come on, you've had it too. Don't be pious with me. When I finally calmed down, God spoke to me. And this is what I told my leaders this weekend. If you let them live long enough. In Peter's life, what did he say? Vehemently. What did he say? I will not deny thee. What did he do? He denied it. And he wept bitterly that he did it. If you live long enough, look right here. Life will shut your mouth. It will. Life will shut you up. If there's gossips out there that they're saying this and that about you, you just let them live long enough until your life proves what they said was wrong, and life will shut their mouth. You live long enough, life will shut your mouth. You go saying things you shouldn't say, things that's not right, you'll find out you live long enough, that finger will curl right back around and come right. I wish somebody helped me preach this morning. I'm telling you folks, life has a way of shutting you up. There's people right here in this sanctuary this morning that they said, I can't stand that Calvin Ray Evans. I can't stand that church. I can't stand those deacons. I can't stand those guys. But suddenly they got sick and life brought them sickness and their families tore apart. And all of a sudden they're doing the very thing that they hated and said they'd never do. They're picking the phone up and they're saying, Cal, can you come down and pray with me? I'm dying. I need the Lord. Life has a way of shutting us up. Oh boy. When it shut him up, then came the questions. He started crying. All the suspicion. I did what I said I'd never do. Maybe when Jesus said, one of you are a devil. Maybe it wasn't Judas. maybe it was me. Put yourself in Peter's shoes. Maybe I followed him in vain. Maybe I never had it. Maybe I was never saved. Maybe I really didn't get right with God when I came to an altar. That suspicion. Maybe I'm really not serving God the way I ought to be. Maybe I did marry the wrong man. Come on, ladies. Don't sit there like you don't know what I'm talking about. If you don't think you married the wrong one, why'd you get rid of him? Maybe I'm not equipped to raise these kids. Maybe I'm not a good parent. Maybe I got in the wrong job. And maybe I went to the wrong school. And maybe I moved to the wrong place. And maybe I made the wrong decision. Is there anybody here this morning that has had a maybe in your life somewhere along the line? Somewhere you doubted, even though you were so sure at it at one point, the devil brought you to a breaking point where you began to doubt what God had really intended for you to do. Maybe I ain't going to make it out of this storm. Maybe I'm never going to feel the presence of God again. Maybe I'll never see the Lord again. Maybe it was all fake. Maybe all of it wasn't real. I know some of you too spiritual to handle this, but I've stood beside the bedside of great men of God when they were leaving this world, that if they ever loved the Lord, those men loved the Lord. And I've been touched by their ministry, but they've looked me in the eyes time and time again and said, Cal, maybe it wasn't worth it. Hey, don't you be too pious. You don't know what you're going to say when cancer takes hold of your body and you get so sick that you can't pastor a church and suddenly all the congregations you knew are now gone and you're left alone somewhere in a poor house to die. You don't know what you'll say in that hour either, and I don't know what I'll say. Great men. Delbert Evans, Deb Evans. For anyone here that knew Delbert Evans, you know I'm telling you the truth. Deb was filled with the power of God. The Holy Ghost gave him supernatural wisdom. Sister Bertha, you know good and well there was a period where you'd go and pray with Deb and he'd say, I can't feel God, preacher. I can't feel God. There's some real maybes. My phone rung last night. A dear preacher on the other line. He said, Cal, I'm going off to preach revival. And I need God to touch me myself. Maybe. Maybe I made some wrong decisions. Maybe I moved too quick. Maybe I said something that I shouldn't have said. Maybe someone took it the wrong way. Maybe I had done something wrong. That's why all this has come against me. Maybe it's, ladies, you maybe say, maybe it's my fault that he's leaving me. Maybe I didn't cook enough, clean enough, take care of myself enough. I'm telling you, the breaking point will make you question everything. Everything. I know I'm over time. I'm trying to quit. After that sorrow came the suspicion, then the separation. Jesus has died. Where's Peter? Jesus goes through mock trials. Where's Peter? Jesus has the whip laid upon his back. Where's Peter? Jesus carries a cross and he needs help. Where's Peter? The one that said, I'll not deny you, and likewise all the others. But then comes one Simon of Cyrene. You carry his cross. Where's Peter? They nail him to a cross. Hung between the heavens and earth. Where's Peter? They take him down. They need a grave. Where's Peter? They have to carry his body. They need a pallbearer. Where's Peter? Peter has separated himself, weeping for himself while the Master dies. Be a sad picture if that's how it all ended. But I close with the second chance. Hallelujah. It's Sunday morning. Still no Peter. Nowhere to be found. But there goes the women to the tomb. And they finally have a conversation. The most amazing words in Scripture. The words of Jesus. Who tell the disciples? And Peter. I will meet them in Galilee. I might have a fit this morning. See, Jesus knew while he was being crucified on the cross, Peter was being crucified on the inside. His soul was being torn apart. His life was ebbing out of him. He knew how useless that he felt. Even as Jesus knew he had to die for the sin of the world, Peter knew he was dying inside for his sin. But when Jesus told those women, go tell the disciples and Peter, he was telling them, listen, I know Peter was dying inside when I was dying on the cross, but you tell Peter when I got up, he got up. When I rose, he rose. I'm giving Peter another chance. And here's a man that goes from a period of time, whether he experiences such sorrow and grief, till just a few days later, at Pentecost, he stands and preaches with such power and fire. But look at the difference of the message. No longer is it what I, Peter, will do. I will not deny you. I am vehement in what I am saying. Suddenly the message is not about what Peter will do. The message is about what Jesus will do. That's how you know when God helps you beyond the breaking point, because the message is no longer about you. The meaning of life is no longer about you. The message and the meaning is about Him. Jesus. Funniest thing. I thought I fixed it. And I found out Mom and Dad had a better one than the one I fixed. Some of you this morning, you're trying to run your life on this. You've reached the breaking point and you're trying to fix it yourself. Oh, God is in the house this morning. He is moving here today. You're trying to bind it up any way you can, and it's not the same. And the devil said it'll never be the same. But Jesus says, take your pick. Choice is yours. The question is not, have I broken? The question is, will He make it new again? A fool speaks their whole heart. I know that. So call me a fool. There was a time in this church where I learned a vital lesson. We were experiencing some things. And I had a meeting. I don't think all of my deacons were there, but some of my deacons was there. And there was a situation that I had had it. And in that situation, that day I took a shotgun full of hurtful words and determined to blow our problem away. And brother, I did. I got red-faced. They tell me. I got hot. And I made it so plain that even though what I was trying to do from that point, I felt like it was the right thing to do under that pressure. I said things I would not normally say. Before I left the meeting, I repented. I repented to the individual. Now, this sounds strange. I was right in everything I said. I was wrong in my timing and the way I said it. Man, Candy will tell you, for 2 days and two nights, I did not sleep a wink. I did what I said I would never do. Angry and sin not? No, I didn't sin against a brother. I sinned against myself. And I kept saying, it will never be the same. Maybe I did something that will hinder me from ever being effective. In this pulpit or with these people again. That seems like a little thing to you. But I'm a smart enough man to know if you crumble one life, you crumble every life that touches. God told me, said, do you want a second chance? I said, yes, Lord, I do. And God mapped out what to do. I contacted family members that didn't even know anything about it. I said, I spoke inappropriately to your loved one, and I'm calling to ask you to forgive me. I've asked them. And you know what? That person hadn't told anyone. You say, well, gee, if you knew that, you wouldn't have even had to go on. But I wouldn't have gotten a second chance. Some of you here today, you haven't broken yet. But man, life is really taking you to the extremity. Get to God with it now. now, today. Not tomorrow. Not in the privacy of your closet. Get to God with it now. No sermon last week. 2 sermons this week. But He's still God. Would you bow your heads with me? Whatever they have, wherever they feel led.